of this computer. We are recording. I'm going to record on my card just in case my computer crashes in a second. Hi, everybody. My name is Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio. This is Zen Talk number 111. And welcome back. And I want to say hi to Kim and to Judy and Holly and Nikki and Lindsay and Dawn and Peggy and Andrea and Karen and Ryan and Karen. There's two Karens. And Diane and Juliana. So welcome. It's been a while. It's been, I think, 3 weeks, something like that.
Since right before the holidays, because remember we fit one in before we left. Yeah, we did
December 23rd. Mm-hmm. Before we do our centering exercise, I just want to say, I want to make sure people know that we have this. We have a page on our website that you can go to see what's cooking with Zen Talks. So I actually scheduled out the next one, not including today, 1, 2, 3, 4 Zen Talks. So they're all here and I'll put the link in the chat, but you can find it on your page. But this one's kind of special. Michelle Accard on March 2nd. Do you want to say who she is, sweetie?
Sure. I am going to pull her up only so I can read you her other books. So Michelle Accard has a book coming out the last week in February. And Todd and I know her because we've done some conferences with her, and she's an author, parenting books. And she has a book coming out called, I think it's 14
Conversations.
It's called 14 Talks by Age 14. So it's about the things that you want to talk to your kids about as they are going into middle school or leaving middle school. It depends on where you live, on, you know, what's elementary school and what's middle school and what's high school, but it's about being 14. But for those of you who don't have teenagers yet, it's not just about that moment. It's about the conversations you want to have as they gear up to that age. Okay. So she has this book coming out. Her expertise is in middle schoolers. Like that's where she worked.
We got one of those.
So she also wrote a book called Middle School Makeovers. She does a lot of speaking events. She's been on CNN and Good Morning America and all that kind of stuff. She's a best-selling author. But anyway, Michelle is going to join us on the 2nd of March. And so her book comes out the week before. And I know that's not a lot of time to get it and read it. That's why we wanted to tell you ahead of time, because it doesn't even come out until February 25th or something like that. And then we're meeting with her on the 2nd. I don't think you have to read the book to enjoy a Q&A with Michelle, because you can, ask her anything. She doesn't need to just focus on her latest work. But for those of you who, it doesn't matter really how old your kids are, young kids, elementary school, middle, or even high school. It's like, what are the questions or the conversations we need to be having with our kids? So we'll be welcoming Michelle just the same way we did Rosalind and Dr. Solomon.
Okay. So this is what's happening today. We want to invite anybody that has a question to put it in the chat box. We're going to get centered as we do every time. And we also have a question that I think a new Team Zen member is going to be asking. I believe her name is Charlotte, and I believe she's on the call, even though it says Char Emily. Give me a raise your hand, Charlotte, if that's who you are. Okay, I'm pretty sure.
She's up very early.
Yes, she is up very early. And we'll give her a chance to introduce herself to the team as well, because I think she might be the only newbie here, but I could be wrong. So let's get centered. So I'm going to invite, if you guys are, it doesn't matter if you're standing or sitting, but if you're sitting, just feel the weight of your body sinking into the chair. Feel your feet on the floor. And let's just do some very easy 4x4 breathing, which is 4 second inhales and 4 second exhales. And let's do that 4 times. And then when you're ready, just come back and open your eyes. All right. As you guys are coming back out of that miniature meditation.
Can I say something about that?
Sure.
And you guys are coming out slowly, I'm sure. So I don't want to bombard you, but I'm finding there's a lot going on in the world, but very specifically in the United States right now.
Sweetie, there's nothing going on. What are you talking about?
Jeez. And I have found that while we are all carrying on and we're doing our daily duties as we have to do under a pandemic, you know, and all the other things we have going on and a transition of power, that sometimes I think I'm doing just fine. Like, I'm not even thinking about it. And then sometimes I get super anxious and I'm not sure why. But I think that sometimes when there's energy around you, even if you're not reading the news or watching TV all the time, it can kind of build up. And sometimes you need to just give yourself a break. And instead of being like, why am I anxious? Nothing's going on. Why am I feeling this way? Just accept that there's a lot of energy in the world right now that's kind of like all around, and just do what Todd just had you do. Just take 4 deep breaths, let it go. You know, it's kind of like, I relate it to like the barometric pressure. Like I get headaches, and sometimes when the weather gets a certain way, I can feel it and I get a headache. Some people maybe get a knee ache or whatever, but the energy outside, if it be weather related or just the heaviness of our political situation right now, it can sneak in. So
it seeps in, or sometimes it just hits you over the head.
It does. And so why I'm telling you guys this is, if you do feel that way, or at night you just feel highly anxious or you're not sleeping, instead of doing this deep, like, oh, why, just accept it and breathe and let go, instead of trying to pinpoint one reason. Because I think that's where we can get really lost, where we think there's just one reason. And if we solve it, then we don't have to feel that way. So just it's a form of self-compassion.
Yeah. And sometimes I use 4 A's. So the 4 A's are, because sometimes acceptance is hard. Like, can you accept yourself for being scared in a situation or whatever? And for me, sometimes I can't get to acceptance. Mm-hmm. So first I go to acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. I just acknowledge I'm scared. Mm-hmm. And then the next step would be, can I just allow the fact that fear might be here in this mm-hmm. moment? And then the third A is accept. Can you accept the fact that you're afraid?
So the first two are just as powerful as the third one. And, you know, meaning that I think my point is, you know, the words Todd just used, if you can just, instead of thinking about that pressure feeling that you feel or that anxious feeling as a problem you need to solve, rather than just a feeling that may be coming from, it may be coming from your immediate surroundings, but it may be just in the ethers a little bit. So you just breathe through it. And so what were the first two, Todd?
Acknowledge, which means notice, mm-hmm. allow, accept is a little bit more of a,
might be a bigger leap,
powerful word. And then the last is appreciation, yeah. which is Ooh. Really hard to get to. Like, can you really appreciate yourself for being scared? Most of us can't. It's because it's uncomfortable. But if you can get to that point, because it's hard for us to transform anything that we can't accept in ourselves.
You know, this doesn't work, because then we'd have to call it 3 A's and a U. But I prefer the word understand rather than appreciate, only because I think appreciate makes people think they have to like it. And understand is more like, I get it. Mm-hmm. I get why I feel this way, but 3 A's and a U.
Yeah. No, I kind of like that. Because understand, but only problem with understanding, it's kind of a heady thing. And I guess appreciation can be too. But if you said for me to, can you just understand that you're scared or why you're scared? I'd be like, okay, let me think about all these reasons why, instead of really dropping into the body.
You do the first three first.
Yes.
That's why you is last.
Right.
So you're accepting. What was the first one?
Acknowledge.
Acknowledging.
Allowing.
Accept, and then understanding is like the, okay, I can kind of close the circle and not try to do so deep investigating or say today's a bad day because I'm feeling this way.
Right. So. And if you guys ever find yourself where you can't accept yourself for being afraid or mad or sad, 2 things I do. Sometimes one is I can accept the one who isn't willing to accept, like just kind of pull back one more layer behind it and just say, yeah, I can't accept the fact that I'm not willing to accept. And then the other is just kind of get into your childhood a little bit. Like, you know, there's this younger person in each one of us that is sometimes in a threatened state or is scared, and know that that person lives in you. And sometimes it's easier to give compassion to that one than it is to our old self. So anyways, okay. So I see Charlotte, cause I want to give her
the floor.
And I'm going to ask to unmute her and see if she's there. It's dark there.
She's sitting down.
And she has a brand new baby too.
Yeah, I'm just finishing up changing a diaper, so I'm gonna be like 1 minute. I'm trying to
go do that first.
We get plenty of other things that we can deal. So you take care of your baby, and when you're back, we'll know that you're back.
I actually have something else to share while she's changing the diaper on that beautiful
sweetie.
Child.
Do you remember changing diapers?
Yeah.
The good old days.
Yeah, I do. I just did it all the time. I was like, I'm going to use cloth diapers all the time. I didn't do that.
Didn't we do it for like a week? It was like a subscription or something.
I was like, I just need to throw this crap away, literally. Away. I was going to share something as far as that kind of, hi, baby. I see the baby.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Oh, there she is. Oh, okay. I'm not going to share my story. I'm going to look at her instead.
And because she's brand new, she might cooperate because sometimes like, you know, babies that are 6 months old, they're loud, but maybe this one's so new that.
Oh, she's great.
Okay, good. She's very
new. Hello. Hi, baby.
Hi.
And if you guys want, you could pin Charlotte so you can see the baby bigger. So you right click it and then you press pin and you can see her much bigger.
It always makes my eyes.
What my friends do on Zoom calls is they'll like pin me and watch me the whole time when I have nothing to do with the call.
Yes. That's what I would do. What is her name?
Kathy, I'll still let you go though, because I'm just going to feed her before I kind of get into things.
Okay.
But her name's Hadley Rose. We call her Hattie.
Oh, thank you for sharing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. While she's getting ready to feed her. Is that what you said? I should go?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Go for that.
Okay. While you're feeding her, I was going to say that, you know, I was just telling Todd a couple hours ago that I woke up this morning and I got all these emails from my Dominican students. I teach at a university outside of Chicago. And I was kind of confused because class starts next week. And then all my students informed me that it started today and I hadn't done anything. They didn't have a syllabus. They were like, God bless my students, because they, of course, think it's their fault. They're like, I can't get on our, you know, page and something's wrong with my computer. And here it's totally my fault. And they're blaming themselves and thinking I'm going to like penalize them. So I had to own it, which sucks. And it was a big time oversight, meaning because of COVID, we started a week earlier because we ended a little earlier. So normally I've been teaching there for 10 years and we would start the last week of January. So I had that stuck in my head, but it kind of sucked. But the reason that I'm sharing that is because I really had to go to my journal and write down all the things I was thinking about myself, you know, like that I was, you know, not respecting my students and that I wasn't being a good role model and that I wasn't being a good teacher. All the things we say to ourselves that, you know, even when we make just a really honest mistake. And the reason I needed to journal it out is so instead of repressing it or pushing it away, I could just say it all and look at it and be like, this isn't true. I mean, it is how I felt, meaning it is true, but I don't need to carry that around in my body all day. Because if I wouldn't have journaled about it, I probably wouldn't have even told Todd. Mm. You know what I mean?
So was telling me helpful, or did you, because you journaled it, you were kind of done with it?
It was kind of a no-brainer, meaning I just, when I saw you this morning, I thought I'd share that story with you. But I think if I had not journaled about it and gotten all that out of my system, I would have been ashamed.
Yeah, you had hung on to it and kept it inside.
Exactly. And I would have felt like, oh my God, I'm just going to pretend that's not happening. And, you know, I'm just going to go on and make my students think it is their fault, or, you know, do something dumb to protect myself. And the more what I always realize in these moments is what we're most afraid of is feeling that feeling of disappointing someone or feeling ashamed or feeling guilty. And again, the difference between shame and guilt is I made a mistake and shame is I am a mistake. And they can kind of go back and forth depending on, you know, what your programming is from childhood, or other times in life. So, I journal all the time. That wasn't new, but I found today to be extraordinarily helpful because I don't even feel guilty anymore. And I don't mean I didn't learn, but I got everything out. You know, I told my students, I emailed them right away this morning and, you know, took responsibility and then got the syllabus out and everything's good. And I'm already interacting with them and they don't really care. But it was a practice of self-compassion where I took ownership. You got to take responsibility. And I will say this, If you guys haven't listened to Brené Brown's podcast from today about accountability and dehumanization, I highly recommend you do, because right now, I'm going to talk about the United States for a second. The desire to move on from what happened last week at our Capitol without holding someone or more than one person accountable is not healing. That is jumping over and avoiding. And we will not heal. We will not be able to move on in a healthy way without accountability.
Do you know what that reminds me of?
What?
Brian Stevenson, I always screw it up.
Brian Stevenson, you're right.
He talked about how in Germany, mm-hmm. they have all these reminders of the World War II mm-hmm. and all the concentration camps. Mm-hmm. And they do that as a vehicle of healing.
Correct.
Where, and he was making the comparison to, in our country, slavery, with the exception of a few museums, is shunned and we don't want to think about it. So we don't right. want to build anything about
we
don't want to,
it.
We repress it out.
And all that has gotten us to where we are now. You know, for those of you who live internationally, you know, and us living in this country, our country's really young. You know, we got a lot of crap that we haven't dealt with, and it's showing up in ways now, you know, in these experiences of white supremacy and privilege and this militaristic action that people feel they have the right to take. So it's, you know, it's rough, but we're young. We're a young country and we need to learn these lessons. And I was going to say, not only is that true, like you said, in Germany, but the whole idea of reconciliation that was used after apartheid was about taking responsibility for what happened in a genocide and owning that and then being able to move on. And a lot of people who took responsibility, they had some consequences, but not everybody went to prison. You know, you guys could read more about South Africa and what happened with apartheid. It was just more about the accountability and taking responsibility. That's how you heal and move on. This is why when someone is harmed or killed by a police officer and there's absolutely zero accountability, it's virtually impossible to move forward because there is just still this social wound festering and there's no accountability for the injustice. And so anyway, I don't want to go into a long podcast. Listen to Brené Brown's podcast from today, and I think you'll find it very illuminating. It's not a fun listen, but it's an educational listen.
Sweetie, mommy phone put in the chat box that our government needs you on the House floor.
Oh, you know what? You couldn't pay me to be a politician. I appreciate the compliment because I think that's a compliment, but and you know, it's interesting that you say that because some politicians that we've been listening to, because I feel like I've been watching more House floor issues for the past year, they just talk and don't say anything. Have you guys realized that? Where you're like, okay, and what was your point after 30 minutes? So I feel like maybe one of our new rules for if you're going to be a politician, you have to take an orator class? You have to learn mm-hmm. how to orate
sure.
and be like, here's my points, here's why, here's my end result, you know, because a lot of it is just, I'm like, what was all that? Have you been listening to the House floor stuff today, Todd?
What do you think, sweetie?
Okay. That'd be a no.
I listen to 15 minutes of NPR in the morning and that's it. And maybe I'll read the Daily Skim, which is a really interesting, quick way to find out what's going on in the world. But that's it. That's it for me.
Yeah. And I listen too much. I have to, you know, I go back and forth. I also listen to, you know, fun podcasts and things that aren't so heavy. But when things like this are going on, I just feel the need to know.
All right. We're going to go to Charlotte. I think if you're ready, I'm going to ask to unmute her, which I'm trying to do.
And if she's not ready, we can go to somebody else and go back too.
Yeah,
so no pressure, honey.
What do you think, Charlotte? Yeah, you ready?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
That's actually, I put it in the chat, but that's like the sixth time that Brené Brown has come up for me lately. So I need to finally listen to that.
Yep.
Have you read Seed of the Soul by Gary Zukav?
I have.
It just reminded me of when you were talking about America being like newer mm-hmm. in comparison to everything and like the collective consciousness of America growing versus like one soul's consciousness and like where that's at on its journey. And yeah. It's just interesting.
Yes. It's a great book. So what she was talking about, it's called Seed of the Soul. It's by Gary Zukav. So for those of you who, I don't know if someone wants to put it in the chat box, but it's a great, not only is it a great read for what we're talking about now, but it was actually an inspiration for Oprah Winfrey to change her entire television show to focus more on intention and how that matches up with her own personality. And that's why she changed the way her show was going, because it used to be a little more Jerry Springer-ish.
She would have skinheads on there.
Yeah. And she's like, no, I'm going to focus on intention. So
one thing about Zukav, Kathy knows all these authors or most of them, and I barely know a lot of them. Is he the guy, he has like a really powerful quote that we use so often. And I don't know if it's about relationships, is like the purpose of relationships.
A spiritual partnership.
Do you remember what that quote is? Mm-mm. No.
But he and his wife do a lot of speaking engagements together. And, you know, I hate to say this, so Gary, if you ever hear this, don't be offended, but I saw him speak again. I've seen him a number of times, but like 4 or 5 years ago, and it's really boring. I was like, oh.
Well, just because you can write a book doesn't mean you're good at carrying a room. And I've said that to you when we're planning for speakers at our conference.
You're right.
First question I always ask is, I don't care how good their book is. Eckhart Tolle changed my life. Boring. I'm falling asleep when Eckhart is talking. It's the truth. Okay. So let's go back to, and by the way, is your volume up at all? I hear some little feedback. So just turn your volume down on your computer. Okay. So we're back to Charlotte. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi.
You want to paraphrase your question or get into as many details as you feel comfortable with? So.
Okay. Maybe we can kind of just do like, you can interject if you need clarity on something or feel like people might need clarity. Cause I forget sometimes that people have no idea how the world works over here. It's so, so, so different.
And where is over here?
What's that?
And where is over here?
I am living in Bali. Used to live on a tinier island outside of Bali, but came over to Bali to give birth because no midwives or anything over there. But I moved out to Indonesia about a year and a half ago. Met my partner and we quickly got pregnant and had a baby during the pandemic on this island on the other side of the world from my family. I'm 22 years old. So it's just been like a lot. It's been so beautiful and I like wouldn't have it any other way because it really allowed me to slow down and just like be in the pregnancy and not have people hovering over my shoulder. I think that was probably the biggest thing. I love my mom to death, but she would just be like at my house every day during the pregnancy. So it allowed me to really soak all of that in and have the birth that I was always wanting and just really have a quiet postpartum experience. But it does mean that things are a little bit messy with like getting all three of us over to Canada when we want to go visit in a few months and everything. And my boyfriend is Indonesian. So he grew up with a completely different background, completely different lifestyle than mine. And we've done amazing at language barriers and culture differences and just really like paving a new way for our little family of three rather than taking on all of our past stuff. But one of the biggest things that comes up for us is money, and not as a big stressor, but as just like this interesting conversation of me being the breadwinner and him feeling like he's always worked so hard to be able to like just barely provide for himself. And that's just like the culture that he grew up in. Minimum wage here, even if you have a job, is like the equivalent to around $200 a month. So that could support him to just barely scrape by, but that's not going to support me wanting like plane tickets to Canada and things that are like my lifestyle standard that he shouldn't have to match. But so I feel fine about money and I work online and everything's all right with that. But there's this shame and guilt around him not being like that provider, because that, especially anywhere in the world, I know like the man wants to go and provide for the house, but especially here, it's a big thing where like the man is supposed to provide. So I guess like my question would just be, I'm curious if maybe even anyone on this call has experienced that with their partner. If like there was someone who maybe the father is a stay-at-home dad, or just like what those feelings are around like feeling like unworthy, feeling like you're not doing enough because you're not going out making money. And he is doing so much. Like he's probably doing more than I am around here with the baby and everything. And I've also touched on the idea that like when I'm making money, you know, if we're thinking about everything's energy, right, and money is flowing to our family, then I kind of think of it as like, we don't know that the universe isn't giving me an abundance of money because it's for our whole family. And that's just the avenue that it's coming from. So that's kind of like the biggest thing that's hit for him and Landon. He's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's true. How do I know that like I wouldn't have had this client if you weren't in my life? Maybe they were attracted to us as a family unit, and the universe is using my income stream as the avenue to bring money to all of our lives. So when you're sitting in bed at night praying for our family to be okay and have money, this is just like the path that it's coming through, and it's coming to all of us. So that's kind of like the one thing that's really landed. But I'm really curious, like, about feelings of shame and feelings of like, I'm not worthy of this type of lifestyle, especially because he's never traveled anywhere. Like when we go to Canada, he's so excited, right? He's never seen snow, nothing, like, but he's just never been anywhere. So it's like he's bought a plane ticket once between islands here for $20. And that was like the only time he'd ever been on a plane. And we're going to go spend like a few thousand dollars to go fly to the other side of the world. And it's just, it's a whole different world for him. So like feeling like, what did I do to deserve this kind of thing?
Wow. What a great question. So I feel like I kind of want to frame it in two separate ways. One is, you know, I want to help this man untie the knots that he or the culture has tied for him. And it's a lot of knots and they're intertwined. But I also want to empower Charlotte to know that, you know, your job is to love and support him, but it's also not to, there's a story that I'm making up that it's possible that you might be wanting to take some of, you know, you want him to be comfortable, but you might want that so much that it starts to bring your energy down. And I feel like there is some loving boundaries of what's yours and what's his. And I just wonder, sweet, if you want to riff off of that.
Sure. So I'm going to offer something, and then I'd like to open it up and see for the women who feel like they're breadwinners, or any men who feel like they're, you know, if they have women in their lives who are breadwinners, I want to make sure the team has an opportunity to share if they want to. But I will say from what Todd said, first of all, that was a fantastic reframe that you gave your boyfriend, because that makes so much sense to me. It reminds me so much of the, you know, the story about the God boats, about how a person is, you know, I'll just paraphrase it, is on an island and they pray to God, and, you know, and then a boat comes by and they say, don't worry, I'm waiting for God. And then a plane comes by and they say, don't worry, I'm waiting for God, et cetera, et cetera. And then the person doesn't get saved. And then when they see God, they say, why didn't you save me? And God says, well, I sent the plane, I sent the boat, I sent all these things, and you didn't look at it that way. So what your reframe does for him is, when he is literally praying, or when he, you know, he can see himself as part of a unit, he's no longer an individual. He's part of a, he's still an individual, but that's not the only thing he is. He's now part of a unit with you. And so together, the three of you are, you know, bringing abundance into your life. So that's beautiful. I will also say that these kind of discussions, like Todd said, you know, the untying of knots, it takes time. And I only say that so you don't feel pressure to like say the perfect thing, the right thing, to solve it today. Like my wish for you in your new family is the willingness, which it sounds like you already have, and he has, to have this conversation again and again and again. One of the things that people email Todd and I about, one of the things they appreciate about the show, because we've been doing it for 10 years, is they've realized how many conversations we have to revisit over and over, that we'll have a show where we'll be like, hey, we resolved this. You know, this is what Todd and I figured out. And then 6 months later, we're right back to that same issue. And I'm telling you that so you know, so you can give yourself that space and expansiveness to have these conversations over time, rather than believe like you need to solve it. And you can even say that to him. Like, the fact that you're living where you're living and he's engaging and in embarking in a new culture, you know, in Canada, and you are engaging and embarking on this new culture in Indonesia, and that all three of you are kind of figuring out a new culture, you also are creating a new culture for your family. So not just your locale or your geography, but like, and you can say that to them, like these conversations about breadwinning, you know, like who's bringing in the money, why, where it comes from. This is the culture we're creating together. So outside, you know, societal conditioning is going to play a role. We can't help it. You know, it just comes in, but you can let him know when things get tough or when he feels that way, say, I totally understand why you feel that way. We've been conditioned this way, but our family is creating a new way of looking at this, a new culture. And it doesn't matter what next door neighbors say or what people say in Canada or you know, this is our family culture. Mm. And so just that, those are the, that's not going to solve it. You know, I'm putting that in quotes, but it's, that gives a nice container for good conversations going forward.
So before I pull Andrea in, because she wanted to share something, this came specifically from Charlotte's email that she sent to me this morning, is that her boyfriend contributes in such a massive way around the house, always cooking and cleaning and literally hand washing cloth diapers. So far above and beyond any man I've met in the Western world. And yet he feels like he's not earning his keep. So for my evolved self is like, oh my God, this man is embodying what I think as the mature masculine, the healthy masculine. Like this is what you do as a man. You do whatever you need to do. And if hand washing cloth diapers is it, like for me, I honor that. I truly kind of hold that up with such high regard.
Well, it's the definition of taking care of your family.
Right.
You know, somehow we've connected taking care of your family with money.
Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Charlotte? You just unmuted yourself.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's interesting because like, I wouldn't trade that for anything in the world. Like I wouldn't hire someone to come and wash cloth diapers, and I'm like healing postpartum and not, I'm breastfeeding, you know, all of these things. And it's just like, that's what I need. Like, I don't need more money. Like we have what we need for our family. We have a little bit extra. We're so grateful. And like, we have what we need to get passports and visas and travel to Canada. So it's like more money wouldn't enhance my quality of life, but like seeing him washing cloth diapers and like rocking his baby to sleep is like everything I need in my life. And I've tried to explain to him as well. We've had so many beautiful conversations around it. Like, it's not something that is he's so stuck on and like fighting me on. It's that it creeps back in for him. So like, he understands these perspectives. And I've talked about that, like, if he were to go out, first of all, my whole belief is around, like, I would love for every couple in the world to get to be home with their babies, like both of them. And that's a big part of what I do. And so I'm like, if I'm like, the biggest thing that I talk about is like having freedom for your family and having time freedom and getting to spend conscious time with your kids and be present, then why would I ever want you to go out and make $200 a month? Like, and that's where it's hard, because I don't want to shun that and be like, oh, that's such a small, stupid amount of money, because they work so hard for that $200 a month. But I'm like, I would never, ever, ever trade, like, have you be gone for 40 hours a week, or honestly, it would be more to make that $200 a month. He'd be gone from like sunup to sundown. I would never want you to be gone, me to spend $200 a month on someone to come into this home and do all the things that you do, and they wouldn't do them the way you do them with love, and they wouldn't get them all done because they don't have that same drive. And then you would be gone and we would have the same amount of money at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And so like, I've kind of like put that whole thing into perspective too, and he gets it, but it a lot of it does come down to like, but there's people out there. What about your dad? Is he going to think that I'm not providing for you and that we can't get married because, you know, all of this stuff. And it's just all of this conditioning, and then it doesn't matter. And he's contributing in a way bigger way. And I've also explained that like, these people, like we use my dad as an example, because it's kind of like the whole Western world versus like where he's at. My dad has so much money, but he's like not really living a fulfilled life. He has so much money. And so it's like, I have explained to him that there's people that have these like massive houses and so many cars and this garage that fits like six of them. Like he can't even fathom that. He's never seen that. We don't have it here. He's never even seen like a really big like Walmart. It just doesn't exist. We have little corner stores. He's going to have culture shock like crazy when we get over there. And like, he's just never seen it. And I said, these people are like looking for something. Like they're thinking that the more that they buy, the more that they have, like the more that they have inside. And it's always just like, it's never going to get there. And I was like, you and these people in these local villages have learned that like, there's something beyond money that brings happiness into your lives. And like, you have nothing, but you've learned to create like the most loving energy circle in these little communities that literally is what everyone in the Western world is looking for. Like, you have it all. You've got it made. You have like what they would pay $1 million for a Tony Robbins mentorship to try and like understand themselves and have what you already have. So like, it's priceless. And it's just like, it's just a different world. It's a lot of interesting conversations for sure. And I've talked about wanting to like equalize the whole world. Like if the Western world is up here on their high horses and we're down here with all this love, but no money, like, why can't we have more of this happening? And I said, like, what would be in the middle of that? And then we looked at our daughter. And I got goosebumps and I was like, wow, that girl's gonna like do some things. Mm-hmm. So it's gonna be an interesting life.
That's wonderful. So we're gonna go to Andrea and then to Ryan. And then if somebody else has a question beyond Charlotte's wonderful question. So I'm gonna ask Andrea to unmute herself. There you are. Hi.
Oh, hi. Okay. You said some things at the end that kind of took my mind in a different direction. But what I was originally going to say is I've been in this situation before, and I guess still am. My then boyfriend, now husband, had just gotten a dual master's degree, worked for a year, and I decided I wanted to get my PhD. So he quit his job, moved across the country for me, and then was like out of work for like 2 years. And it was a struggle. And for the most part, I don't know. I mean, you can't make comparisons between men here. I don't know your partner, but for the most part, my husband's a feminist and, you know, doesn't care, but like stuff like that still creeps in, you know? And I was just going to say on a practical note, and this is certainly not going to solve all of your woes because we've had many conversations, but on a practical note, I like to always point out, and I hope this doesn't sound manipulative because I don't mean it like that, but when I have friends whose husbands are stay-at-home dads, when I like see that on Facebook, I always like to like show them and be like, oh, look what they're doing today. Or what I was initially thinking was, oh, in conversations about money, especially when we're not having personal family conversations, but we're talking about other families, or he'll be like, oh, my friend got this job, can you believe how much money he's making, or something like that. It'll be like, oh, that's great, he got a new job. And then I always like to bring up like, but I don't care about money. Like, I like to make sure and all our conversations about other things that I'm reinforcing that my values have nothing to do with money, and that I don't think anything better of that person because they make more money than this other person. So I just like casually bring that up when I can. And anyway, that's not going to solve all your problems, but I do like to make sure my focus is him knowing that my value has nothing to do with like how much money people make.
Thanks, Andrea.
That's great.
We're going to head over to Ryan. What do you got?
Hi. So I wanted to make sure I didn't lose anything. So I have like a whole like page of notes. So I don't even know where to start. I've been jobless for about a year now. And my wife has not been. And I'm extremely comfortable just throwing the whole gender role thing out the window. And if money's coming in, money's coming in. But it's taken a lot of work for me to get there. And an unexpected side effect is that my wife at some point communicated to me that she had a problem with me not being the breadwinner. Like, she was still operating in this place where I'm less attractive to her when I'm not the one bringing home the bacon because of her own conditioning. Cause we grew up in the same country that has the same narrative about what men and women should be. And so we engage in a lot of those types of conversations around, and I found myself making some of the same arguments to her that I've heard you have made to your boyfriend about money coming in the family, regardless of where it comes from, and how all these things are just, you know, societal conditioning that we need to shed like old skin. But it didn't really work until I stopped trying to solve a problem with my head that existed in her heart. And I found myself using logic and using reasoning and trying to frame the thing and trying to give her different perspectives. And that didn't get us anywhere. And the one thing that really got us somewhere was I simply asked her, you have a voice in your head telling you that I should be a certain thing. Whose voice is that? And really, really like get down to not so much our surface level situation, but the underlying feelings we have about that and where those feelings came from. And what we really drilled down to was she had some stuff that she needed to heal, because her only problem with me not having a job existed all in her. And there was nothing that I could say to get her into a place where she didn't make it a problem for her. But I could be a safe place and a sounding board for her to work out on her own what it looked like to do that healing. And so it may be like you've talked about how you tried to explain to him what it's like here, and he doesn't understand because he's never seen it. And so that type of perspective shift isn't going to, like, you're literally trying to get him to understand something that you both know he's not going to understand, not until he sees it. You know, my wife's never seen snow, so she drives 3.5 hours when it snows halfway across Texas to go play in an inch of snow because she's never seen it. And I've been snowboarding, I've been skiing, I've been where there's snow, and I'm like, it's not great. It's like, if you've never seen it, you romanticize it, but she hasn't seen the snow, so she doesn't know that. That type of stuff doesn't get in her head and stick. You know, she has to go see it. And so I feel like, and maybe this is just me projecting my situation onto yours, and hopefully something that I'm saying is helpful, but I think a way that you can be helpful is to draw the boundary and understand that you cannot bring him to a place where this is not a problem for him. Mm-hmm. He is the only person who can bring himself to that place. Mm-hmm. And the best thing in my experience I found as a partner that I can give my wife when I find myself in this situation is to be a person she can talk to without judgment, a person who can ask good questions about them and their upbringing and their conditioning and why. Whose voice is it? Where is it coming from? What are you attached to? Why are you attached? Why are you listening to that voice? Do you like that you're being controlled by these things? And really, like, just keep sending it back into them, into their childhood, into their parents, into their parents' parents, into their culture, and just kind of like give them a place to tease that out themselves. And my wife is now at a place where she just kind of doesn't care who's making money, because she'll come back to me and say things to me that I've said to her, but they're now epiphanies to her, you know? And I can't even take credit for that, other than just the fact that I was a safe place for her to work out what it means for her to be her and to do her healing. And then she found a place that was more, more integrated, and there's less room for having problems with how things are when you arrive at that place. Mm. But he's got to get there on his own.
Yeah, it's funny. So what I think of, Ryan, and sweetie, you and I talked about this, and this might land poorly, so I want to say that first, but I was a witness of a verbal argument between two good friends, and the one friend was accusing the other friend of being insensitive, and the other friend listened, and he really listened consciously, and then he said he wants to remain connected to this man, but then he also said, but it's also not my job to manage your emotions. And I think that can be interpreted like a disregard of how your actions or thoughts or beliefs impact other people's. But I feel like sometimes, and I do this, I think a lot of us do this, is we think it's our job to make sure that my wife doesn't get mad, or my kid doesn't get sad, or my coworker doesn't get upset. And I feel like we take way too much ownership over other people's experiences, but that can be interpreted in a really kind of bad way.
No,
you know?
I get it. And I will, just kind of listening to Ryan and then listening to what Todd had to say and Andrea too, the thing that I just wrote down, Charlotte, that I think maybe can be, you know, a perspective, is that pulling all these pieces together is that questioning and understanding is what leads to dismantling. You know, so in him, meaning you don't have to do it. It's not your job, just like Ryan said. And you can offer some support, like Andrea said, when the time is right. Like, you can say things like that. You know, you can make sure he knows your value system. And then also, just when it creeps up for him, rather than don't let that creep up, say, I get it. Mm-hmm. I understand it. I don't believe it, buy into it, or agree with you, but I understand it's going to creep up. And then you can lead to the questions that Ryan was talking about, or, you know, create, because you're very, I can tell you're very wise beyond your years. You've obviously done a lot of work. If it be, you know, you could have come into the world this way wise at 22, or there's some things you've had to do to kind of figure out this kind of thinking. But it's questioning, allowing, you know, not questioning him necessarily, but allowing those questions to be out there and understanding. And that will take things down brick by brick. You know, that will dismantle it over time. So it's like a mixture of give him that space to do that over time, and also know that it's okay for you to challenge that narrative, mm-hmm. that both are, you know, we can be understanding and empathetic and still speak what we need to speak. So,
yeah. And I want to just add, some people have been putting some stuff in the chat box. And for those of you who are live on this call, you can read that. But a lot of people listen afterwards. Nikki says, it seems harder for the man in their home country. It was easier when we were overseas, as we were making our own way / rules when we were overseas. And Karen from San Diego says, it seems like these perceptions that stay-at-home dads are worried about are mainly coming from other men. Mm-hmm. I totally believe that to be true, by the way. Every woman I know thinks a dad who parents stays at home and provides emotional practical presence and support is the hottest. I think that's really interesting. Judy says, I have seen many couples having the issue and causing real problems in the marriage. I think it's really helpful that you're aware of it and open to talk about it. I think it's worse when the problem exists, but it's not out in the open. It causes more shame. Keep talking. Good luck. Marnie, when I think Marnie said this, it can border on codependency. And I think she's talking about regarding managing others' emotions. Gail says, yes, Todd, great point. And that is so important in parenting. When our kids start to feel responsible for parents' bad mood, it's so damaging to their confidence and what they are learning about relationships. Great points, Ryan. And Lisa says, my 17-year-old will say, when I project, Mom, that sounds like a you problem. Not in a cruel way, but shaking me out of it. I love Lisa's share. I love when kids will kind of lovingly challenge us. Like, I don't think this is about me. Like, what did Rob Bell say?
Rob Bell said, if you're really coming after, he was talking to the teens.
He's talking to our kids in the audience.
But he was talking to the teens. He said, if your parents are really coming after you, you can say to them, is this mine or is this yours? And that's the case in marriage too. Like, you know, Todd and I just had a discussion today about something where it's like, a lot of it is mine, but he thinks it's his. Mm-hmm. And a lot, you know, it's like, it's, we're like trying to manage each other rather than just, you know, coming to each other with our own responsibility and accountability.
So Charlotte wants to respond to Ryan before we move on. So I'm going to unmute Charlotte.
Hi. Yeah, that was amazing. I want to thank you, Todd and Kathy, for holding this space, because for some reason, like, I cannot promise that I will be awake at 4:30 a.m. every time there's a call, but like, for some reason, I knew I needed to get a membership and get on this one. And not that it was even going to be about something that I needed, but that I was like, I need to ask a question. And I actually didn't even know what question I needed to ask until the email went out. I was like, what conversation do I want to have? So I'm grateful for you for holding this space. And I think that it was a conversation with Ryan that needed to be had. So I wanted to thank Ryan for that, because I think that that's kind of why I came here, is that I knew that it wasn't a thinking problem. It was a feeling problem, not a problem, but like a feeling situation that was popping up, and that there were only so many times I could explain it to him in the ways that I think through it, before it came down to like holding space for him to feel through it. And that's what you guys are great with, and that Ryan put so beautifully. So I really thought, like, there's got to be someone with COVID and everything that can relate. And I was hoping that it would be someone on the call that could relate, and not someone saying, oh yeah, my husband is at home, as helpful as that is too, but someone that could literally be like, I've had those feelings of guilt. And like, so thank you, Ryan. That was really helpful. And I was showing my partner is with me. He's getting bits and pieces of this, as English is his second language, obviously. So I was showing him, I was like, look at Ryan's at home and he's got like guitars and pianos in the background. And that's something that Riska has been picking up on, is like getting more into playing guitar. And I've been teaching him how to play the piano. We bought a piano over here for our daughter to hear music. And like, that's something that has made him feel like he has something to do during the days as well. So I was like, it's not just you. It's not just you. And I've been telling him, especially during COVID, it's really not just you right now. So many people in the world are going through this and not having jobs. But I also wanted to quickly bring up something that I feel this might be something Todd and Kathy have a lot to speak on, in terms of Ryan mentioned that, you know, he was having all of these emotions around a little bit of guilt and stuff for being home, but then it was actually his wife who was experiencing a lot of her own heavy emotions. And I feel like in relationships at times, it's kind of like one person has the permission to like be the one that's down, and then the other one's kind of got a support, and it doesn't really hold as much space for like both people to be feeling through their own things. And I don't feel like I have a ton of my own emotions around this, but I have always been someone that like a pattern for me has been feeling responsible for other people. And so like that came up in a healing session for me when I was pregnant, was this idea of responsibility. And I feel responsible for like my clients. I feel responsible for our home and our family, and maybe like putting a lot of pressure on myself too. So sometimes if I do have any, like anything come up money mindset wise, I'm like, that's my own stuff. I got to work through my own time, because if I bring that to the table, that's going to trigger his feelings of guilt around not bringing more money in when I know that there's money coming, but I just have my own stuff to work through. So like, it's interesting. Maybe you guys can touch on that in terms of like being in a partnership where one person has all these feelings. So then you don't want to like be the other one with the feelings and kind of like triggering them.
Yep.
Cause that's something that I hadn't talked a lot about or thought a lot about, but with Ryan mentioning that it was like in their situation, his wife was the one that was allowed to have all these feelings and he was trying to help her out of them. But what about his own feelings of guilt too, that were in his own like subconscious and his patterns and everything. So yeah, just thought you might have something to touch on with that.
Sweetie.
I do. I actually just, the reason I was like on my phone for that second while you were finishing is I wanted to find something that Mark Nepo wrote, that has always been really helpful to me. And it's about, taking turns, and I'm just going to paraphrase this. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he starts by saying, we must take turns diving into all there is and counting the time. And he says, the gift and responsibility of relationship is to take turns doing the dishes, putting up the storm windows, giving the other a chance to dive for God without worrying about dinner. While one explores the inner, the other must tend to the outer. Mm. And why? And then again, he goes into explain a story about how when pearl divers are diving, one dives down to the deep depths and the other one is at the top holding whatever line mm-hmm. to keep them safe as they do the deep dive. And then they switch and they take turns. And why I love that analogy or metaphor is that, to your point, we do have to take turns. And again, I know you're saying like, he's already triggered by something and you don't want to bring up your own feelings because then it'll re-trigger, re-traumatize. But there has to be mm-hmm. a time to take turns on every topic. And again, it's not always so clean. Like tonight we're going to talk about this topic and it's your turn. You know, it's not so systematic, but it is important that, because you know this, Charlotte, I think everybody knows this. If we don't do that, then the way that we're supporting the other person isn't full bodied mm-hmm. because we're trying to repress something and keep something down in order to not trigger them. Whereas if we're given some space to say things that can sometimes be dark, you know, sometimes the language that I use with Todd is, this is like ugly or dark or yucky, but I have to say it. Mm-hmm. And not because it's the truth with a capital T, but because it's affecting the way I think and act. Mm-hmm. So even if I know in my highest consciousness, it's not really who I am or what I believe, it's in there. It's like societal grossness that I need to. And so he, you know, that, and again, but that, you know, for you, Charlotte, for everybody, that's a conversation too of how we're going to do this. Like it's, you know, this is almost like conversation 301 mm-hmm. instead of 101 or 201. You were going to say sometime.
Well, it's funny. So the visual I always get is above and below the line. And Kathy just used an example, like if there's something dark in you, the way I choose to interpret that is you're below the line. And where when two people get in trouble. So the one thing is, you almost always, Kathy, when she's coming from below the line, which means a constricted, fear-based, closed off space, she usually knows it, which makes it a lot easier for me to receive it. A lot of people out there, don't even have the knowledge that they're coming at this from this defensive, righteous place. But Kathy has given me the gift to at least inform me, like, yeah, I know I'm not really feeling good about this, but I'm going to say it anyways. Where I think relationships get into trouble is when two people are in that below the line dark space. And it happens to Kathy and I every now and again. Like, I'll be having a shitty day, she'll be having a shitty day, and all of a sudden our shitty days kind of combine and like just explode in a big shit mess.
And sometimes who's ever having the less shitty day has to kind of pull out and, you know, let that other person, like, this is marriage, or this is relationship, or this is partnership, or this is even parenting, is that sometimes we have to assess that. Not every moment is a great time to go deep about these things.
That's actually something we've experienced a lot, where like I'm usually the first one to recognize, like, this is me like being an Eckhart Tolle fan over here, but I'm like, this is both of our pain bodies reacting to each other. This is not us. And so I'm the one that pulls out and I'm like, this is not you. This is not your higher self. Like, I'm looking into your eyes. Your soul's like off on some other thing right now. Like, you're not here, come back. And that I'm like the one that recognizes that and then doesn't fully feel my own pain body freaking out and being ridiculous. And something that I actually like to say, like, when it's something that I know is not coming from my higher self, like, I'm like, if I have this fear around money right now, but I literally know I have like $10,000 coming in next month and we're not running out of money, so why, you know, it's just stuff that comes up, right? And a habit that we've gotten into is saying, like, the story that I'm telling myself is, and so we say that probably 500 times a day, of the story that I'm telling myself is that I'm not worthy of, you know, living and like not supporting the family. What's up? Do you have things to say? Do you want to share?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Mommy and daddy are good communicators.
Yes, they are.
Yes.
So I'll say, like, the story that I'm telling myself is that we're going to run out of money next week. But the reality is that we're not at all, even close. And so, like, that helps us kind of, the stories that I'm telling myself do need to come out.
Yes.
But they don't need to be that heavy when I acknowledge that they're only stories. So that's something that we've been in a habit of, is like, when things need to come up, but you don't want them to drag the other person down, and just like be like, acknowledge it, that this is not coming from the highest place in me that knows that we're always going to be okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I would say, because I say the story I tell myself a lot, so think how different these two things sound. Kathy, you're mad at me, versus Kathy, the story I'm telling myself right now is that you're mad at me. Like, what's the difference between those two sentences? I think one is putting Kathy in a defensive posture, and the second one is like, I don't have any idea if this is true or not, but this is on planet Todd over here. I think you're mad at me. And I feel like that creates a place for conscious conversations to take place.
And then the other piece of that that you mentioned is, I'll give a very benign thing. Todd, where are the keys? Versus, sweetie, I can't find the keys.
Yes.
Which is humor, lightness. And I say sweetie because that's why Todd and I say sweetie a lot. It keeps us from, it's an emotional buffer in a good way. It's good, you know, it helps us resolve things. So to your point is we can use humor. Humor is a tool. Humor doesn't mean that what we're talking about is not important. Humor is the way we buffer a difficult conversation, not at each other's expense. I don't make fun of Todd. I use language that's lighter to be able to talk about something heavy. And so just that combination of those two, the story I'm telling myself, and then make it a little bit jokey, you're still saying it. And I think that sometimes it's like with our kids, like, you know, sometimes the sex ed talks Todd and I have with the girls is very funny and light. We're not like, now listen, girls, we use a lot of funny, like, you know, we joke, we use a lot of,
and they last language. They last about 60 seconds,
but they listen and they can engage. Because if we're being too serious, they can't engage. So I'm just, I'm not teaching you anything new. I'm validating what you said. And you know what, Todd, is 333.
Ryan has one burning thing he wants to share. Please. So I'm going to unmute him.
Sorry, real quick. I don't know if this is helpful or not, but to piggyback on top of the story I'm telling myself thing, One of the things I don't want to speak too much about it because I'm still learning about it because I'm very new to it, but there's a school of thought called IFS, which is internal family systems, where you treat your interior as a family of individuals who are all talking to each other, like in the movie Inside Out. Mm-hmm. And so when I find myself telling myself a story about a thing, I'll go one step deeper and say what part of me is telling that story, and then get kind of personify the voice in my head that's telling me that specific story, and then approach it as someone who's who hasn't quite bought into it yet. You need to prove this, and let me poke holes and scrutinize and have a conversation with that part who's telling me that story, because then it's a whole lot easier to then assess it for validity or call myself out.
Yeah.
A one level deeper thing, but I'm very new to it. So that's all I'm going to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah. And that's very effective, Ryan. That's what I do in EMDR, is pull all those parts and have conversations with them. And that's very real. You know, those of us who are you talking to yourself? We're always talking to ourselves. Do you know how many voices we have in our head? Do you know how many different stories we have and how many different parts of ourselves? Every age we've ever been lives inside of us. So as Ryan said, to engage all those parts into question, you know, there may be a part of yourself that's very loud, but they're actually only 17 years old. You know what I mean? And so that's a conversation. So
we got the one question today. So I apologize in advance if somebody else wanted some support, but that's what Facebook's for. So head over to Facebook and write it out. And Kathy's really good at responding. I'm pretty piss poor at responding because I just don't get on Facebook as much. So my sweetie, plus Kathy will write 6 paragraphs and I'll write 4 words and it'll take us about the same amount of time. So anyways, and the schedule is up for the next 4 talks, I think. So head over there so you can put it in your calendar. And I just wanted to say thanks to everybody. And thanks to Charlotte and baby Hattie for joining the team. And I guess that's it.
Bye, Charlotte and Hattie.
Thank you guys so much.
You bet. Thank you for the good question. Thank you, everybody, for the feedback, for listening. I learned a lot. I'm assuming you guys did too. Yes. So love you all.
Be good.